It's good to have in the studio with us at KFRU, the chancellor of the campus here in Columbia of the University of Missouri, and that's Chancellor Brady Deaton. Good to see you. How are you?
David, good. Thank you. Good to be here.
Now, I printed off all of the stuff that goes along with this Mizzou Diversity Summit. This is quite an undertaking. How proud are you of this event?
I'm very proud. David, let me just take a moment to say how concerned we are for all of our alums and colleagues in the northeastern United States affected by this storm, and our prayers and continuing thoughts go out to them and wish them the best.
There are some over there, aren't there?
There are, yes. We have many, as you know, great chapters in New York, certainly in D.C., and then colleagues and all up down the East.
If they were here for homecoming, hopefully they got back safely, or maybe they just extended their visit here.
Yes. Some drove through snow, but they made it back.
Oh, my goodness. What is the background for the Mizzou Diversity Summit?
The Diversity Summit, we had it 2 years ago here. Sort of an update. We've had the Chancellor's Diversity Initiative has been undertaken and from the time I became Chancellor. And Roger Worthington and the College of Education have been very deeply involved in that. Michael Middleton has really been the leader of it, of the Diversity Initiative as Deputy Chancellor, to ensure that all the colleges, all components of the university are engaged in this. It's been just a significant initiative to ensure that minorities gain access to all aspects of the university community, that we promote a sense of civility. And we've had, as you know, a couple of incidences here and there that really are minority, very minor kind of incidences in the bigger sense of things. But we've had real emphasis on trying to ensure that there's minority access to all components of the university program. So we've been concerned about the mix of faculty, administrators, students, and minority recruitment of students has been important. But the most important thing is to promote a sense of inclusiveness and a real civility among the diverse elements, and that's gender diversity, sexual orientation diversity, language diversity, international components of diversity, diversity in the socioeconomic status. We do not want to become an elite university where only certain socioeconomic classes have access to our campus. So therefore, we've really expanded, as you're aware, work opportunities and scholarship opportunities from students of all segments. And that's been coincided with the initiatives we have to resolve differences, to promote dialogue, to ensure that everyone feels part of our community.
The environment and atmosphere of just overall society now runs against civility too many times. I think we see that in politics. We see that just in our daily lives. This seems like a strong headwind. Are universities and colleges across the country paying more attention to this? Is this something that is fairly unique that Mizzou has been involved in? Because if it's not coming from families or from education, I'm not sure, or religion, I'm not sure where the more civil tone is going to be initiated.
Well, we've taken it on at this university from the very beginning. I mean, it's been a very important part of what I've wanted to achieve as a chancellor here. And fortunately, I've had wonderful colleagues in the administration, among the faculty, and among students. I want to give our students perhaps some of the biggest applause here, because they have stepped forward in such a significant way with the One Mizzou initiative particularly. When they saw some of the ugly incidents, they said to themselves and projected to us that we're better than this. Why are we allowing these very few situations to define what we are as a student body? So they set out to demonstrate to each other and to the broader community of Missouri and the nation what we were trying to achieve. And that's just been a wonderful atmosphere that's been cultivated here. I think it's an issue on a lot of other campuses around the nation that they've been addressing. It's because our faculty have been engaged and our staff with others around the nation. We've, however, not waited for anyone. We've defined our own direction here as much as we can. We share that with others. We bring in ideas that we get from others. So I do think it's a concern in higher education. And the colleagues I work with nationally are very concerned about it. With the real emphasis being on promoting a dialogue, we have to be free and strong about expressing our views, ensuring that all components of religious views, gender views, are part of the dialogue that it takes to become a citizen. And there were periods over the last few years because of the intense political dialogue that has arisen, and to some extent after 9/11, particularly on religious differences, that is not very healthy for us as a democracy. And we very deliberately have set out to try to ensure that we stick with our forefathers, who the Bill of Rights and the founding principles of this country. I mean, it's a very, you might say, a very patriotic thing to do, is to ensure that we do the right thing when it comes to intellectual dialogue in this country, promoting reason and not hatred and not narrow-minded views of differences among people. We're a nation of immigrants. We're a nation based on diversity. And our democracy, I think, truly depends on our ability to strengthen, sustain, and nurture those concepts.
Well, I appreciate those strong words. Again, our guest is Chancellor Brady Deaton on KFRU. But even some of those things, even saying some things about diversity and about understanding, or at least tolerating, accepting those of very different views or practices than ours, those trigger. I mean, in nowadays, you can't say anything without triggering, seems to be an opposition in some ways.
And that value that, you know, we've cultivated here on the campus goes back before I became chancellor, certainly, to respect the values that were established: respect, responsibility, discovery, and excellence. And honestly, I give Charles Schroeder, our former vice chancellor for student affairs, big credit here, and Mel George, who led a task force that established those values. That value of respect comes up very, very boldly and strongly in this context. And we have to have respect for each other, each other's views. And you cannot begin an appropriate dialogue in subject matter in the social sciences or in perspectives on history unless there is a respect there for different cultures, different viewpoints. That's important to this country.
I'm curious as to how do you get this down to the level of prospective students or first-year students, students who first come to the University of Missouri? How is the message given to them that this is something that we value and we want you to understand that if you're going to be a part of this campus?
That message is very deeply instilled by the commitment that our top administration, our faculty, our staff, and all dimensions of student life and recruitment have and carry forward. That message is very deliberately crafted and carried forward to project those values that we deeply feel. And we base these on working with parents of students here at the University of Missouri over the last 15, 20 years and identifying those things that really matter to them. And we've tried to project that. So in that sense, we've tried to really honor the fundamental values of the people of Missouri. And I think that's a strong, wonderful set of values. And we put it in our recruiting material, in messages, and summer welcome. And when we go out and talk to alumni groups, it's just something we carry the banners very strongly and very proudly.
You have a research and scientist background. How do you measure this, whether it's working or not?
We measure it by the growth in diversity on campus, by the minimum number of real serious conflict among students and faculty and staff. And we've had some of those, but they've been diminishing over time. And a single incident does not alter that course. But we see it most boldly in the 20% growth in, for example, over the last 2 years in African-American faculty members on the campus, with the very significant double-digit growth that we've had in minority groups on campus of all sorts. We have a very wonderful profile of minority students on this major research campus. We're well above the average of the AAU public universities in our diversity here in the University of Missouri.
Last night was a keynote speaker, Livingston Smith, I think he talked. There are still workshops today. I'm curious as to how this relates. Many people would say, does this relate in any way to the Supreme Court mulling over the decision about affirmative action as it's used on other campuses in this country to make sure that there is a diverse population of students?
It relates only very indirectly. That Supreme Court case, I think, is a very special issue in Texas. It will have far-reaching implications, certainly. But we have been following the Supreme Court interpretations, going back to the Michigan case and before. Our Deputy Chancellor, Mike Middleton, is a very renowned civil rights attorney, and he has followed this very carefully and I might say philosophically, not just legalistically, so that we have had an ongoing dialogue, David, about this matter and the Supreme Court interpretations for the last decade plus. And we've felt that we're trying to do the right thing with the right set of principles involved. We've not allowed narrow interpretations of some of these issues to derail us. Some universities have allowed that to happen by trying to follow what I would call almost the letter of the law in contrast to the spirit of the law. So we're careful, but we stick to our fundamental values and we carry forward. We're going to do what's proper, but these Supreme Court interpretations over time, I would say parallel and certainly affect the dialogue on campuses across the country. But the dialogue is bigger than that, really. Those are outgrowths of the way people feel as well. And the fact that we're going very rapidly, of course, toward a majority-minority kind of population in, you know, in many parts of this country. And as you know, we're headed toward that as a nation because we're a nation that's changing in our composition all the time. And that's very good. I talked to many of our alums. I was down in Houston recently talking to some of our donors. And they were recognizing Houston, Texas, you know, a massive urban center in this country. The majority of the population is minority. And they're just having a wonderful time thriving as a Democratic city, building. And many of our alums are involved there in very proud ways to build a very proud city.
It must be tough in admissions policies, though, to say, okay, we don't have quite perhaps the representation we need of the diverse elements of our society, even though they are moving to more of a majority or a much more prominent representation throughout the country. So admissions dealing with the nuts and bolts of that or the specifics, while at the same time philosophically saying, some people would argue, but why do we need any special parts or segments of the admission policy that would allow some exceptions?
Well, our goal is because we have open access here at the University of Missouri, we turn down, as we recruit students around the country, we turn down no Missouri students that are qualified to come to the University of Missouri. And in a sense, we've been fortunate. States like Texas that have such growing population and immigrant populations have had a different challenge because they've had to cap the enrollment. And therefore, as you know, they've gone to, I think at one point anyway, a 10%. If you graduate in the top 10% of your class, you got in the University of Texas. So some relatively weak students got in the university while some strong students were denied depending on the composition of the school's demographic population.
But you wouldn't see that happening.
We've not had that in Missouri. We actually looked at that model as a way of promoting diversity and felt it was not effective, would not achieve our goals. So we have been more aggressive in ensuring that various populations across the state and the nation have access to the information. So they know that indeed we are making efforts to ensure they can come to the University of Missouri if they are dedicated students wanting to excel. And the profile of our minority students across this campus, I'm very, very proud of because they are not concentrated in a couple of three areas of the university. They're in all dimensions. They're in engineering. They're in biomedical sciences, vet med, English, you name the field. We have minority students spread across this campus in a very healthy way. And I must say that's been a surprise to some external groups that have come here to review us, in fact. And they have. We've been specifically asked, where's the concentration of minority students? And that's a strange question to us because they aren't concentrated. They're spread across this campus. They're very organized in their own groups, which is wonderful. There have been great citizens, and whether we're talking about international students, Hispanic students, African-American students, on and on and on. You know, we have a vibrant student body here that's working together. There's going to be differences from time to time, but it's an exciting atmosphere at the University of Missouri, and everyone outside who comes here feels that and feels good about the campus because that's the spirit that's really there on the campus.
We're going to take a break. We'll come back and visit more with the chancellor of that campus at the University of Missouri, Brady Deaton. He's on News Talk 1400 KFRU. Chancellor Brady Deaton stays with us for another segment on News Talk 1400 KFRU. Something I've wanted to talk to you about over the last couple of months when we've been here and the last time we didn't get to it. I want to talk about online education because I find this to be a fascinating, more philosophical discussion. But several things. Now, I don't know. I've not heard it pronounced. I've seen it in many articles, and that has to do with a venture offering free classes online called Coursera. Many universities are signing up on this. Now, since we've last talked also, I may not be able to find it very quickly, but their university released information here that MU is going to also invest, I think, $2.5 million in more online degrees. Right. Is that similar to Coursera, or is that different?
It's a bit different in that the difference is that Coursera is providing free courses from some of the top elite universities that are cooperating with them. Let me say I was just involved in a big discussion of Coursera at the AAU meetings last week. So I'm familiar with it. The free courses offered online so that anyone can take them. So in other words, access to information. So hundreds of thousands in some cases have signed up for some courses. Relatively few may finish, but even in the relatively few, you're still getting more than you'd get in any kind of university offering. The courses are offered without credit, though. And it's up to the university to determine whether they can find a way of using that resource and giving credit. Now, the University of Missouri is different in that our coursework in distance education goes back a long ways. When I first became provost, I remember my first committee I established was an online distance education committee to look at how we can electronically offer courses. Mm-hmm. We decided to offer them based on degree offerings. We want our faculty to do this, and we want to provide them for credit, and as much as possible, try to move toward having certain degrees online as well as certain coursework. Yes, it's outreach-oriented, but most of the growth in our electronic offerings have been right here on our campus. And that's not a bad thing because it's frankly enabled us to address some of the capacity issues. And students who might have taken a course somewhere at a community college or at another four-year institution to make up for something that they might be missing can now take it online and from faculty right here at the University of Missouri with credit. So ours are principally credit offerings. We've grown by double digit. Our average over the last several years have been 14 to 16% growth in offerings. So we have over 10,000 students right now of various places in the world, you know, taking our courses. But we've discovered that most of those students are right here on our campus. And the growth of distance-oriented students has been 2 to 3% per year. So it's been relatively, relatively small. The $2.5 million investment is specifically to expand the offerings around the nation and around the world. We've always had some from around the world take the courses on internet and so forth.
Would this be like what you're doing here at the University of Missouri? Would it be more like what some of us remember as a correspondence course?
Yes.
Or an extensive extension course?
More like that, except, it's for credit, and it's now with the electronic technology, we have so many different types of interaction that can occur. Courses can be taught asynchronously, time-wise, from a time perspective, or they can be taught, you know, during the time the course is being offered. We have all kinds of options now because we can capture it and show it later.
What are people saying, though, in the field and when you go to your meetings about, and they're called MOOCs, MOOCs, I guess, is what you call this, massive
open online
courses. And Richard DeMillo, director of the Center for 21st Century Universities at Georgia Tech, said, this is the tsunami. It's also new that everyone's feeling their way around, but the potential upside for this experiment is so big that it's hard for me to imagine any large research university that wouldn't want to be involved. I mean, this is interesting because when we think of online courses, that you could just go online today and take a free course, again, not getting credit, you might get a grade, you'd get a certificate of completion if you completed it. I think for some that's a great idea, but I mean it goes against what many of us say is a fuller experience of higher education, and I don't know what that will do to that.
It does, and we're all in a state of uncertainty to some degree, let me say. But it's an exciting opportunity, and I think we ought to look at it that way, not with any fear. Our universities aren't going to go away, the kind of residential, major research-based university like ours. These have the potential, because of the scale involved in these early phases particularly, let me just emphasize, basically no one's making money from this right now.
That's another point.
Not that they might at some point, and that's wonderful. Right now it's venture capitalists and foundations supporting a lot of this work, and that's great. It's experimental. It will, the bottom line in the AU meeting was that the scale may be particularly critical and important here to a lot of universities as they gear up, and it may even result in revenue-producing opportunities. Some universities have made significant revenue from this, let me say, and they're able then to expand and use it to enrich other aspects of their programs. It definitely provides a knowledge base to adults' continuing education. It's really the highlight, it seems to me, of a high point in the continuing education efforts of the university, which is why we have just invested $2.5 million to ensure that we're expanding our coursework and brand with offering credit as well. We still feel that's important for what we're doing. We're considering right now working with one of those firms. Coursera is the one you mentioned. There are many others, let me say, that have found these coalitions, and they're called, you'll see them in the literature, called different things. Harvard, Stanford, MIT are working in different ways. It's at a very experimental stage, but the sense is that it's going to grow, and it very well may be a tsunami, and by that I mean a tsunami that's a very positive effect on people's opportunities to gain learning and to, in some ways, to have that recognized with certificates. And it could be that certain types of certificates become the cash of the day, you might say, or the currency of the day for obtaining certain jobs or getting access to certain, and if so, I'd say more power to them, because we want to stimulate and expand educational offerings.
Well, so for some of us who would say, well, it would really be neat to know what they're teaching in a certain course right now, and we're too afraid to go back into a classroom on a campus, on a college, this would be a great thing to
Absolutely. And in fact, some of our administrative staff that I work with are saying, I'm taking a course next semester. One said he's taking two courses next semester. Mm-hmm. And I said, that's great. I may take one myself just to see and experience what it's like and get a refresher on some aspect of economic theory. It's great to have the ability to gain access to it. I can do it on my own time rather than walk over to our economics department where I could take a course, I would say, probably of equal value, certainly, or maybe more value because I'd be interacting with colleagues. But given the way the world we live in today, listening to someone from another university, perhaps, who's online, a well-known economist in my case, might be just as good, and or at least a substitute, maybe a second-best substitute. But nevertheless, it's accessible.
If you're able to do that with your schedule, then you're going to be you're an amazing Superman, because you don't have time to do that. But if you find time to do that, then good for you. More power.
Well, as you know, we aspire highly.
Yes, we do. truly we do. Always good to talk to you. Thanks for coming in. We'll look forward to the next visit.
Wonderful, David. Thanks so much.
Chancellor Brady Deaton on our program at KFRU Columbia.